And we're recording. Hello, I'm Alex Vera, and I'm with Margaret Funkhauser, who is the Director of Arts and Media. I had this written down.
Writing, Film, and Media Arts.
Thank you, Margaret. This interview is happening on April 5th, 2021, over Zoom. I'm in New York City. In my apartment. Margaret, would you introduce yourself?
Sure, I'm Margaret Funkhauser and I'm in my home in Natick, Massachusetts.
Yay. All right, Margaret, I was rereading the summaries of your last interviews and you talked about finding out about the virus in 2019, about the transition for your school to virtual learning. And then in your last interview, you talked about your husband and you sharing space and teaching because you're both teachers at the Walnut School. Thinking about this year, and if you'd step back, can you describe what this year's been like from like a bird's eye view?
Sure. I think it's been really great to do this project because it actually gives me a kind of these transcripts or these recordings at every interval. Otherwise, I think I would completely just like the internal tape would be erased because things have changed so much and they change so much frequently and often. I was thinking about my first interview and how I was so confused about when I had heard about the onset of COVID. I had a lot of international students from China. And so I had like in my mind when I was interviewed last summer, this very distinct memory of them talking to me about it. And I had swore it was after Thanksgiving, but it was very much after Christmas because nobody heard about it in the US until after Christmas, but like just like was not able to get a kind of handle or a grip on a timeline last summer. And I think it feels a little bit like that still. My school opened in November and I taught the first quarter high flex. So I had some students remote and I had some, that first quarter we opened, some students remote and some students in the classroom. And then this past quarter, we had a much more bigger critical mass of students. And we actually we spent the whole quarter making short films on campus, which was like a kind of, I keep describing it as sort of epic or Herculean. Like that was just, it was insane what we did because we had students, we had like 16 students making films on campus, 11 students who were still online. And some of those students were in Korea and China and Hungary, but they were part of these collaborative filmmaking teams. So like, I feel like we did that, we can do anything. So if I think back to like September when I was not sure whether what we could do or how it was all gonna work and to now, it's just feels sort of incredible. And I don't know, I guess, what will be next. We have one more quarter in the school year and we'll have even more students on campus. And I think we're, you know, it might feel the closest to whatever normal is because we're not doing a big crazy filmmaking project. We're running regular classes. We have enough students that there will be sections that are fully live and enough, a small cohort of students who will be online, but no teacher is going to have to teach high flex where they have some students on Zoom and some students in the classroom. So it will feel sort of a kind of fitting. There'll be still a little bit of remote learning and those classes will be fully on Zoom and a lot of in-person learning, which still has, you know, it won't feel like it did a year and a half ago, but it will feel close, you know, somewhat close to that.
So things are moving into more in-person. High flex, I've never heard that word before.
I think it's the sort of jargony, at least the term my school uses to describe a classroom that has students in front of you, and then you are also managing students on Zoom who in some classes are just like on a screen behind you. There's no, the students in the classroom aren't on Zoom because it would cause all kinds of audio things. Though I taught one small seminar class where we were all the people in the class and the people in remote, we were all on Zoom together. It took some tricky audio maneuvering. And it was just weird because I'd be talking to a student on Zoom, but they were also sitting right in front of me. But it was cohesive. The classes where you have students in the classroom who aren't on their laptop, and the students who are interacting on Zoom with the teacher through, like, there's a hot mic in the middle of the room and a camera in the room, there's something about that where it just does not feel cohesive or like everybody is, you know, in the same platform or in the same mode. So that, like, that is, I think, true high flex. And it's kind of, I mean, most teachers, I don't know any teacher at my school who thinks there's any benefits from that.
Can you talk more about the transition going back into like the normal from the new normal?
Sure. Well, the transition from quarter two to quarter three, where we had students, like new students who had never been on campus before. They had only encountered the school and their department and their teachers remotely. Came, and that was kind of exciting. And the school has a lot of protocols, like we get tested every week. You know, there's like a lot to it, and has had very low positive numbers and very like, and no spread. So we have some isolated students who test positive, but there has been no spread at the school. So that was a big, huge step. And that quarter, this quarter that just ended, was I really wanted, as the department head, to make meaning about the students being together for the first time. So we did these collaborative films. And also there's a kind of pressure at my school to produce content in addition to teaching the students so that we can sort of are outwardly facing show the people who might be interested in coming to the school what we do, what we make, and putting art out into the world is part of the mission of the school. So it was sort of a combination platter of having to both make meaning about being together after that high flex situation, which there was no meaning. I felt like we should have just all been online. It was just much harder to be high flex. And then now, we have enough students, I think, to not, like they sort of, like that, I would say this quarter was sort of an onboarding project, like a getting to know you project, like a immediately by having to collaborate. And then now I think we can kind of relax a little and just sort of offer classes, teaching classes. And some things like that would never have been possible in the fall. Like there's a class that's a sort of play script workshop where they'll actually probably do some staged readings at the end of the year outdoors is going to happen. I'm teaching a song lyric writing class. There won't be any singing, but it will be, I don't know, there'll be there will be some collaboration at the end of that where the lyricists will send their lyrics to a composer who probably will record what they make, but we can still sort of play that out to an audience. We had a screening last week of the films indoors, like a huge auditorium, but at 46 person capacity, but it was pretty exciting to see that work, to be an audience member in a theater and see that work. We filmed without masks, which was like not like just one, the final take was without masks. So there are the, sort of these steps, these like little steps towards normalcy. And I think that it, I think the hardest part about what's coming next and closing out the year is I want for me and for my faculty to not, I don't know what the right way to say this is, because I don't want them to slack. But it's been such a hard year, and we've all had to do so much, you know, three times as much work as it has been, to just be okay with, you know, there don't have to be fireworks at the end of the year, I think. And usually my school heads towards that, like at the end of the year, there's just so many events and there's so much, you know, there's so many performances and there's just this, like, we want to send the seniors off. And I think I want to find a balance between like acknowledging the year it's been and making sure that the seniors go off feeling like with some closure, but not having to like just, we describe it sometimes at Walnut Hill, like the 80 days of May, like it just not feeling like it's the 80 days of May. So I think that's my, if I'm thinking ahead, I feel very low worry about students getting sick, faculty getting sick. I think it's more that everything is a kind of anniversary right now, and I don't want, and we worked all last summer, like many teachers did. I think what I want is a kind of like appropriate sort of tapering. And then really, if whatever we can do to have a summer, which is, you know, part of, you know, the, one of the few perks of being a teacher. So, and that's a lot of my mind in terms of like returning to normalcy. But if it was really normalcy, we'd all be on like a hamster wheel heading towards graduation. And I kind of want like a really slow conveyor belt heading towards graduation. And the kids, you know, I think they are excited to see each other and they have a lot of energy for that, but I think they are kind of burnt from the year in terms of learning and stuff like that. I've had students who were taking on, like seniors at, in my department can take, do huge independent projects that are very self-directed. And I had two tell me a couple weeks ago of just like, I just want to enjoy my last, you know, 8 weeks of school. And I was like, I get it. And they're doing great. There was nothing wrong with their projects. They were, I think it was all good, but they made a kind of choice for themselves to say, like, I don't want things to get more intense. I need things to be less intense.
Definitely feel like no one needs more intensity right now, especially your students. So how is that tapering? Can you talk more about what that tapering is going to look like?
I can only, I mean, I can't speak for my faculty. They'll do what they're going to do with, you know, their own bandwidth. But I think for me, it's not, I'm very like, a huge part of my program is collaboration, and it's a very small program, so it's not a program that can sort of rinse and repeat. It kind of every year has its own flavor and its own sort of special kind of students, and they often drive the energy and the projects that we do. So it's very easy to sort of see an opportunity and then think like, oh, this year, instead of doing it this way, let's do it this way, that way, and then even better, you know, just this, because it comes sort of is fed by a kind of creativity. And I think the old kind of saw of not stepping in the same river twice, like it's very, sometimes when you do the same artistic creative project, even if it has pedagogical merit over and over again, it feels like it doesn't feel as exciting or as fresh, especially if it's collaboration. So it's hard to do collaboration by the book. But as a teacher, you feel like you're not reinventing the wheel, but every time you just like, you're always sort of, I don't know what the right expression is, but sort of amped up and locked in and keyed in to this thing. And so I can see myself as we have the most amount of students back, I'm teaching songwriting, and wouldn't it be great that like for them to collaborate with other students, and then let's do a live thing, and you know, just like more and more and more. And I think for myself, I need to say, to kind of find a, resist the kind of pressure that's gonna it's okay to teach the class and just teach the class and not have to be, it's like, I don't know, I think, I don't want to speak for all teachers because but at my school, there's definitely, even if you've been teaching for 10, 15 years, there's still this sense that you're sort of, I think, striving, I guess might be the word. There's a kind of striving of, and I think partly that's because it's a school that's enrollment driven. Like we need to constantly sort of be feeding the machine and attracting students, and you know, high school students aren't the same as they were 10 years ago. And so there's a kind of sense of kind of producing things, even though my department is very process-based, but sort of you teach the class, then you create the projects, and then you find a platform for the projects that other people can see. You find audience for the projects, and then you have to market all of that, right? So it's a long, like it's not just teaching usually. And I guess I want to just say in this, you know, the last 8 weeks of my school year, let it just be teaching. Like it doesn't have to be those other steps of like, let's put on a show and then let's like write a grant because we put on the show to, you know, to get money or more audience or. So I think that finding the peace with, like, you know, I think, like I said, slacking is the it's a more, it's not the right term, but it's minimal, I have to come up with the right term, but it's like a minimalism or something like, but also like, high school students on a campus where they're on lock, you know, not lockdown, but like they can't leave campus, right? So there's also a lot of pressure, not to keep them busy, but to keep them structured. So I think that is like, there's all these like kind of weird side pressures. Now that the kids can't leave campus, they can't go into Boston, they can't have, like, they are going to have a prom, which I don't even know how that's going to work, but on campus, they'll have a prom. But there's just a sense that like it's on us to make their experience the best it can be during this time. So that is intention with my minimalistic approach.
Margaret, that's a lot and a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, COVID, you know, has been helpful in understanding the mechanics of a, like, you do a job for a long time. This is my 9th year at this job, and there's something about COVID where I'm able to get a little distance in there and see, like, oh wow, like, there are all these, the job description is this big, but the actual lived experience of it is very different. And, you know, you think about time differently. You think about, you know, time, you know, we deal in sectioning, right? That's like a big thing with teachers, you know, your preps and, you know, all these things I'm sure probably happen on the college level, higher ed level too. And you think about compensation and you think about the social. One thing that has been on my mind a lot is the kind of social emotional support that happens on my campus, who that falls to. It's not part of one's contract, right? It's not a line in the contract. And just, I think the past year has really helped me see that is a kind of labor that a lot of a certain segment of the faculty and staff do, and it kind of goes, it's sort of invisible in some ways. And so I think these things are, I'm able to see them a little more clearly now than just being kind of in the, like, you know. And I don't think I'm the only one. I mean, I think there will be, and we're not in crisis mode anymore. And we're not in the kind of post-mortem mode yet either. So I think, but when we get to a kind of post-mortem mode, I mean, I hope that people start talking about this sort of thing. Like, and if I was gonna say, like, be more specific about that, I think it's like, just trying to stay connected with certain students, especially students who are remote. I have students who have thrived artistically during the pandemic, and I have students who were super capable who are, like, failing all their classes, you know? And so that's just a lot of, like, it's like the support and trying to sort of shepherd kids through and their parents, because they're in high school, I think is, it's, there've never been sort of models like it, you know, to try to, I sit in a lot of Zoom meetings waiting for kids to show up and they don't show up. And I think that they, rarely is it, I think, willful, like, rarely are they blowing it off. They either have high anxiety about things or they're just short-circuited. And so I've been thinking a lot about, there was a certain amount of that on campus, but when you're on campus, you can just, like, stick your hand out your door and, like, say, come in and talk to me. And now you're just, like, screaming into the void. No. So the more students on campus, the better, easier it will be to connect with them. Hopefully that will sort of, like, not only will be mitigated, but I think it will be, at least those kids will feel more, you'll be able to connect to them better.
Thinking about boarding school and how the transition to virtual is extra extreme for a boarding school than a regular, because you become their family, like, you are their people.
Yeah, in loco parentis, that's what they call it. yeah, and you know, some, one of the things that this lot, related to what I was talking about is that there are people on, I would say, that something I've been thinking about a lot is how that breaks down by gender as well. And so a lot of that social emotional support falls more to the women on campus than it does to the men, unfortunately. And I think that that is also, that's mirrored in society, obviously, though changing, and there are exceptions to the rule on campus, even with that. But I've had many, let's say a handful, I don't want to be hyperbolic, a handful of male colleagues say to me, like, I'm so glad that you're connecting with that student because I'm just, like, it's not my thing, I'm not good at it. And it's very complicated because I do think if you have teenage girls who are fragile and upset and vulnerable, it can be a little fraught if you are an adult male in that situation. You certainly need training, and I think our school could do better with the kind of training, and potentially the women who absorb that work, like me, could be better at saying, no, actually, you have to go deal with it. So that's like something that's definitely, I don't think I've, you know, it's heavily on my mind, I would say, recently. It's been, I think we've been going through a restorative justice process at Walnut Hill, and we're just in the sort of meetings, that meetings or the forums are voluntary, they're not required. And I was in a forum recently and I sort of looked around and I saw, like, of course, like this, the people who, you know, shoulder the most of that support there, and three nights of their week going to them. And there's just a kind of, that's a sort of, I hope that that's something that after COVID we can talk about as an institution, I guess. And those are also not myself, but a lot of those women also run the affinity groups on campus. You know, there's just a lot of, like, because I imagine that if they don't, there aren't, you know, there aren't a lot of people of color on our campus, and or biracial people. And so I sort of imagine that they think if I don't do it, then nobody's here to do it. And so I think I'm thinking a lot about that and how, like, COVID, everything is more so. It's just extra amplified. And yeah.
Things are extra in COVID. Things are more amplified. You said that you're going to wait until post-COVID to have that discussion?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of DEI work that's going on, and that's a big focus on the campus right now. And that's awesome. And having these forums is a real focal point of the spring. And I think that it, you know, that what I, there's a little bit of what I'm, is on my mind that's dovetailing with that, but it's more gender-based, I would say. And I think that, your question has me thinking of, like, why not now? Why not now? And then I'm like coming, it's totally good. It's good. It's good. I think that it is, to me, having like the administration going to the administration and having a conversation about that, that's not, to me, that's, they will listen, and I don't, they, you know, and I don't know what real work will be done. In my mind, it's more of a grassroots kind of thing of the folks who are shouldering that work, coming together and figuring out what's, what to do about it, or how to speak about it, or how to, and so that has to happen in my mind, sort of somewhat, informally and casually is not the right word, but it has to, organically, that's the word. So that is, and I think we've been talking about it a little bit preliminarily and things like that. Somebody recently proposed that we all wear t-shirts that have our salary on them. And like, I would love that. I mean, I think that's the kind of thing that has to kind of happen. And that, even though that seems controversial because it's about money and people don't like to talk about money, I think the people in those, like us who are in those positions, we don't have any problem talking about money. So like, there's this, I think there's a kind of feeling of just that which has been like, let's get some of this stuff out into the daylight, right? It's been in the corners and the shadows and things like that. And here's a way I can sort of wrap up this piece of the interview is, there's, COVID has asked teachers and advisors and staff, dorm parents, I think, to cross boundaries that we were advised to not necessarily cross before, in terms of checking in with students, like finding out what's going on at home, why don't they have their camera on, or just like, you are, I talked about this in other interviews, like it's, I'm talking to someone, it's 5:30 in the morning, or it's 11 o'clock at night, or they're in their bedroom and I'm in my bedroom. And so the things are a little wobbly. And I think there's also some, as we are getting feedback and getting some, you know, much deeper training in terms of supporting BIPOC students, like formality is maybe not the way to go. And so I think that there's a kind of, we're in a transitional phase of thinking about what is the role of being an adult who supports students. And COVID, like I said, like, you know, there were just, you know, there were weeks, especially a year ago, where I had a standing meeting with every kid in my department every week just to check in with them. And, you know, it was sort of like, make sure kids are connecting with an adult by any means necessary. And I don't, there's no way that's rare just for our school. And so I think the conversation that's gonna need to happen has to do about, are we gonna then pull back on this sense? Or maybe spread out the, like, I think that when I feel really burnt from supporting students in a maternal way or something like that, that someone might frame it as maternal, you know, sometimes the advice is like, well, you should just set stronger boundaries. And I think there's a sense that like, yeah, but if everybody did that on campus, no one, the kids would have no support. So it's sort of about, I think there's also a kind of, we need to kind of spread out that across campus. But that's definitely me, my perspective, because I'm amongst the people who spend a lot of time making sure kids have connection to an adult.
That is so interesting, thinking about how this is going to change, yeah, relationships between teachers and students post-COVID. Because that connection sounds like, I mean, so helpful for the students, a lot on you and the few teachers that are doing that, but really important to the students, needed.
I saw it in my kids' elementary school teacher as well. You know, I saw, you know, having the, in this, particularly in the spring when everything was on Zoom, like just so much more, so many more emails, so much more checking in, so much more trying to make sure the kids were seen and heard and connected. And so I think that part of it was that sense of not being in the classroom. And not so much in the middle school level. I didn't see it there very much. But elementary school, and I saw it certainly at our school. And also, like, there's a business aspect to all of it, that we don't want students at our school to attrit. Like, we don't want them to not re-enroll. So there's a kind of, I mean, I think that is, that's not, I wouldn't say why we're making sure they're okay, but I think retention is a piece of it for sure. We don't want to lose kids. You know, and it'll be interesting too, I think, in terms of it, like admitting future students as well, the ways I think we've learned this year, like, not about fit, but just like there are students that are not cut out for online learning. And, you know, I don't know if that's going to be part of the future of the school. And then we found out that certain kids love online learning, so maybe it should be part of the future of the school. It could be a whole revenue generating part of the school. So, you know, I think that is, schools now suddenly have way more options in terms of how they deliver content. But I think the only thing I can really think of is in terms of things that we would retain, like there's something about, I think kids go on medical leaves or something like that now. You know, asynchronous work is, you know, legit. And, you know, meeting with them on Zoom, legit. And so those things will, I mean, I think it'll be interesting to think about what we'll keep.
No more sick days.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like the snow day thing, right? They were like, there were no snow days. That was like a big, there are, head of school did call like a heads holiday, I think in early March, partly because also the breaks have been kind of wonky. Like we didn't have spring break as we know it. So it just felt like a long, you know, because they don't want kids traveling, you know, off in the midst of a quarter, like to leave and come back and stuff like that. So he did call like a heads holiday type thing, which was like a snow day, I guess.
But all the kids have stayed on campus since they came on campus.
All the boarding students have, and they all have singles, which is very unusual. When we come back at full, much fuller capacity, in a week or so, there will be students who have roommates actually for the first time. We had day students who came and left, but they're in the testing pool. So, but the boarders are not allowed to come and go from campus. And their parents aren't allowed to visit them. Though I think they're trying in the final quarter to have some visiting sort of days, outdoor visits and things like that. But yeah, I mean, the campus is closed to anyone who's not, doesn't get tested weekly.
It's wild. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, and it's I mean, they've done a really good job of keeping everyone safe. And I think there's contact tracing also all over campus. You have on your phone, you tag in so they know where you've been on campus. And there, you know, and they have in the few instances where someone has tested positive, either faculty or staff, you know, they've been able to notify pretty clearly who that person was in contact with. And I don't think anyone who was a boarder has tested positive. I think a few day students and mostly adults. And now a lot of us are vaccinated. So that's the other big, I mean, that should go on the record as well. That's a big thing when the vaccines opened in Massachusetts for teachers. You know, that was like, there were, you know, even like, what are they called? Like vaccination angels. There were people on campus who had like their 5 laptops and, you know, making sure other people got into the system and things like that. So that was, you know, heartening to see.
When was that? When did it open up in Massachusetts?
I was vaccinated on March 10th, and I think that was about a week after, there was a drugstore, CVS, opened, or like they were the first ones to say that teachers could sign up, and then a week later, the vaccination. State vaccination sites, but you know, it was like ordering groceries a year ago. Like you had to get up at like 2 a.m. to get your appointment. And some of my colleagues had to drive hours across the state to get vaccinated. So it just seemed very roll the dice type thing. And it is a relief. I mean, it felt kind of monumental to get vaccinated and, surreal, kind of surreal as well. So it benefits our teenager the most because our habits aren't really going to change, but he gets to maybe hang out with a few more people now that his parents aren't as afraid of getting sick.
You said it was surreal.
Yeah, I think I was in just being in the drugstore and getting the vaccine, and there were other, like a couple other teachers there and just talking to them, and just this sense of sort of relief and also the feeling that like it doesn't really change anything as well, I guess. And it had been so long, like it had been a year, almost to the date. And it was, yeah.
You said you and your husband's habits haven't changed, but your teenager's has.
I just mean that we have been very cautious about letting him hang out with his friends and like basements and things like that. So like now that, and then that was to keep our family safe. And you know, and he is, it's not like he's gone out on the town at all, but I think we're more comfortable if he wants to go to the record store with his friend, where we might have been, if they weren't sort of in our immediate circle, we might have said no. And he's actually going to go to Walnut Hill next year, so he will, I feel a great sense of sort of relief knowing that I know that he will have in-person learning, and, you know, that he will be immersed in a community. And I think our elementary school child today went back full time, so it now rides the bus. Like, there's so much that is like changing. And I think we just keep our fingers crossed that there won't be some new wave or new variant that shuts everything down again. But my 9-year-old came home today. It was the first time he was like together with all his classmates. He had been going every other week to school. And they had like after school care, which he like loves that scene. And he just came home, and I don't think I had seen him that happy. And that's like, I'm not exaggerating in the whole time during COVID. And so it was like really, I had sort of suspected that it was, and things about his like habits have changed. He's been hanging out with like kids down the street and like all these things. But when I saw him today, and it was like a full day of school and a full afternoon on the playground, like I could just see it. I could just tell that it was like he was happy. So I think of that as being a kind of, you know, like symbolic that I think as a teacher and as a person in the world, I'm maintaining both of those things. But I haven't felt what I saw him feel yet. You know, this kind of like normalized pure joy from a kind of feeling like things have sort of reset. And so it'll be interesting. I don't think it'll be because I'm like running around in a bunch of people personally, but there'll be something. There'll be like, I like to ice skate. And one of the things that I've missed a lot is being able to go like public skating. And so one might have to wait until like November, but like there'll be something where like it will like tap into that like primal memory of what it had been like. So I'm excited for that, or hopeful for that.
Me too. That's such a beautiful scene to hear about your son coming home today. Thank you.
It was very, 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 and then like, it was like 30 varies before he got, I was like, how was it? He was like, it's very, very, very. And I sort of suspected that the last word was going to be awesome. Like I did. And if he was really, it was awful. He would not have gone through all the varies there, but it was pretty funny.
Well, we're just about 5 minutes before 8. Is there anything that you wish you had said in any of the interviews, in this interview?
No, I think each of them is of the time. I've said this, I think, in the last one or the one before that, that, you know, like it has been challenging to be like in the middle tier at my institution. So like kind of department head middle management, because caught between the administration and the kind of the faculty at large. And I feel like I can see why there was tension for a lot of the year between those two bodies. And certainly, like, as just like any kind of feedback that you would give anybody, like areas of success. And everybody needs like a little, you know, room for growth. And I think that I certainly feel that about my institution. And so I guess I would just say that, you know, which is a special place. There are not many places like Walnut Hill. And that, you know, when I speak about the challenges or areas of growth for Walnut Hill, I do it with love in my heart. And it's been a year of, I don't think anybody would have had known the right thing to do or had the right answers. So, and I hope they learn from their mistakes. Is this the closing interview, or do you know if the project, you don't know? So I will resist closure.
You can closure this one if you want.
I know, but I always like, it's like I'll taper. That's what I'll do. Like I talked about, right? It'll go along with the school year. So no, I think I'm good.
Margaret, well, thank you so much. This was really fun to listen to. Thank you. I'm going to stop recording.